This presentation has been previously broadcast.
The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
As of Sunday, 565 unaccompanied children reportedly crossing the border, an average per day, up from 313 per day last month. 4,200 children were told now in custody, 2,943 of them held beyond the 72-hour limit placed on the Border Patrol. Homeland Security says the U.S. could soon reach the highest number of people apprehended at the border in more than 20 years. Immigration lawyers say migrants are sending their children over the border alone illegally, so they won't be sent back. Democrats are blaming former President Trump for the overwhelming surge at the border. He and his successor, President Joe Biden, are speaking out tonight, though the Biden administration still refuses to call what's happening a crisis.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, well, that news comes from Fox. I do find that quite surprising. I just said to my producer's headset, I just said to him, they're blaming the president, President Trump, for the problem at the border? Really? He says, yeah, no, the Biden administration's doing that. Just to give you some perspective, and Father Tom Betts is going to be stopping by in a second here. I want to get his take on this. Look, we are having a situation on the southern border. I've not talked a whole lot about it, as I've often shared with you. You know how I am on this. I've fed people on the other side of the border who were living in trash dumps. I know the suffering that people are going through due to crime and to abusive governments, due to natural disasters, who just want to give their families a better way of life. And I also know on the other side, those who come up here, there should be a lawful way to enter the nation. And this is wherein lies the rub. It's a difficult situation. As a Catholic, as a Christian, what do we do for our brother and our sister? And, you know, how do we also juxtapose that against the fact that a nation has a right to sovereign borders? You know, when President Trump, when he left office and President Biden was sworn in, what did you see? Just going back to that news clip, I'm thinking about this. Just, you know, you saw a surge of migrants showing up on the southern border, right? In fact, you might remember that there was a caravan of migrants that left Central America to make their way north even before the inauguration. So they knew what was going to happen. We've got a different policy here. Trump is out, Biden is in. Well, now the Border Patrol, they have a crisis on their hands because a number of the people who are arriving there, they've just overwhelmed their resources. In fact, there's a possibility, and I find this just absolutely amazing, that officials might have to put some of these migrants on a plane, fly them to the northern border checkpoints so they can be processed up there and relieve the pressure on the southern part of our nation. So you take them from Mexico to Canada and you bring them in that way. There's also news that the Border Patrol is catching people who have illegally across the border, and then, well, they're releasing them. You know, this catch and release has been going on, but with the proviso that immigrants, you have a date to appear back in court, you know, down along the border in order to state your claim to asylum. So you come in, you get booked, okay, you're free to go. Will those people honor the court date that's been set, or will they make their way into American society? And while we're hearing in the mainstream media about kids in cages, right? That's the other thing that always bothers me. Kids in cages under Trump. We're now hearing the same kind of thing, but without that language, right? I mean, there's so many kids down the southern border. We're hearing that the Biden administration has more than 800 kids in custody who've been held longer than 10 days. You know, they've been held longer than the 10 days are allowed to, I should say, under the law. So it's gotten so bad that Senator John Cornyn, he's a Republican in Texas, he teamed up with Senator Sinema, the Democrat in Arizona, to write a letter to Biden asking him to use the full weight of his office to deal with this. They're seeing it as a crisis on the border. But it appears that the way that he's dealing with it is just to say to the media, back off. Just back off. So no media, and here's a problem I have, right? No media is allowed into the camps. What? No media is allowed into the camps or into the facilities where these people are kept. There's a media blackout. And guess who's complaining about it? Even CNN, which is pretty liberal, is complaining about it. That never happened under the Trump administration. So President Biden was on ABC News. He did an interview recently. And He says he doesn't want migrants to come. Let's know what the president had to say.
The idea that Joe Biden said come, because I heard the other day that they're coming because they know I'm a nice guy and I won't do
they're
what
Trump did.
They're
saying this.
Yeah. Well, here's the deal. They're not.
Do you have to say quite clearly, don't come?
Yes, I can say quite clearly, don't come.
A message of don't come, but policies, say critics, that won't turn them away if they do. With thousands of migrants now being released into the interior of the country with no family match DNA tests, no COVID-19 tests, and no guarantees they'll show up for court dates once processed. In sharp contrast to his predecessor's border wall and remain in Mexico policies.
Yeah, those are those words are a stark contrast to what President Biden said more than once on the campaign trail. He said this specifically to Telemundo in a debate when he was asked about his immigration policies and how they compared with the Obama administration. Listen.
What I would do as president is several more things, because things have changed. I would, in fact, make sure that we immediately surge to the border. All those people are seeking asylum. They deserve to be heard. That's who we are. We're a nation that says if you want to flee and you're fleeing oppression, you should come. I would change the order that the president just changed, saying women who were being beaten and abused could no longer claim that as a reason for asylum.
You didn't answer the question.
Well,
the president,
did
you make a mistake with those deportations?
The president did the best thing that was able to be done at the time.
How about
you? I'm the vice president of the United States.
Well, he's the president now, right? So the Biden administration will not call this a crisis. And I don't like the word crisis, to be honest. I think it's overused. But it did slip up in a recent press conference. I think it was the White House press secretary that was there. She tried to cover her tracks after this reporter brought it up. Listen to this.
There have been expectations set outside of unrelated to any vaccine doses or requests for them that they would be partners in dealing with the crisis on the border. And there have been requests unrelated that they for doses of these vaccines. Every relationship has multiple layers of conversations that are happening at the same time.
When you were talking a moment ago about diplomatic negotiations between the United States and Mexico, you said crisis on the border. Was that a
challenges on the border?
Okay, but so that doesn't reflect any change in
nope. The
administration's view of things.
Nope.
All right, and that was Jen Psaki, the White House press secretary. Former President Trump has been coming down hard on the Biden administration and the way they've handled the crisis. He said this on Fox News primetime. I don't know whether you agree. Check it out.
Young children are coming in and they leave their homes and they come up because they think it's going to be so wonderful. And frankly, our country can't handle it. It is a crisis like we've rarely had and certainly we've never had on the border. But it's going to get much worse. They're coming in from everywhere. They're dropping them off and they're pouring into our country. It's a disgrace. Well, my policies were working better than they've ever seen on the southern border. The wall is almost complete. They should finish it, but they're destroying our country.
All right, so let's talk about it. We'll take your calls. I've invited Father Tom Betts to stop by. He's a minister provincial at the Pittsburgh Capuchin Franciscan Province. He's been with us in the past, and He was the director of the Office for Pastoral Care of Migrants and Refugees for the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. There's a great thing he wrote, and I should go back and reference this, because when we were dealing with the whole immigration issue, I mean, isn't it funny how it fell off the radar for a while? COVID kind of just muted it. It's back again. But prior to that, that's all you heard about was immigration. He wrote a piece called Catholic Social Teaching on Immigrants and the Movement of Peoples. It's actually, if you want to find, I'm sure it's at the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops website. But that really breaks us down in a very clear and very cogent way. And he joins me today just to give us some perspective. And Jake's telling me in my headset right now that, yeah, he already found that. He's going to post it on Twitter. So if you want to check it out, at Drew Mariani Show. You can follow us there at Twitter. Father, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew.
Always good to have you here. You know, the catechism and the teaching of some more recent popes, including both St. John Paul II and Benedict XVI, tells us, look, there's this natural right to migrate. And we're seeing that. I mean, as I said when I began this, my heart goes out to anyone who's been abused or natural disasters, taken away their home, their livelihood. There's political persecution, whatever might be happening there. But at the same time, the Catechism also states that political authorities may exercise the right to immigrate subjects to various judicial juridical conditions. What's going on right now? Why does that seem to be happening right now? And how do we balance what we're now seeing through the eyes of our Catholic faith?
Well, in the article that I wrote that you referenced, I cite what the Church teaches about migration, immigration of people. Obviously, for all time, people move from one place to another. We're all here because somebody moved here before we were born, perhaps. But the Church says people have a right to leave their homeland when things are bad there, when it's intolerable. And our families came from Ireland and Italy and Poland and places because they were hungry. There was no opportunity. So they exercised their right to leave their place and come to this country where there were opportunities. The second piece of Catholic social teaching is that countries have a right to regulate their borders. They have a right to regulate the migration of people into their country. So these two principles can seem to be colliding, mm-hmm. right? You have a right to leave Honduras or El Salvador because life is intolerable there, but the United States has a right to regulate our border, which means to decide whether you come or not. But the third principle of Catholic social teaching, which is just so Catholic, to have two principles that recognize both sides, but then to have a kind of moderating or a mediating principle, and that is, but when countries regulate their border, they have to do it with mercy, mm-hmm. with mercy. And so how do we recognize that people are desperate to leave terrible situations, that inhuman, that before God they shouldn't have to live the way they do in El Salvador? Yeah. How do we balance that with our right to regulate the border in a merciful way? And that's the whole thing. Now, what's happening now is not a merciful or an orderly regulation of the border. It seems to be chaos right now. And that's not in anybody's best interest. It's certainly not in the best interest of the people who are leaving Central America, children who are on their own.
Yeah.
I mean, chaotic border is not mercy. So we have a situation that's not in keeping with Catholic teaching. It's not merciful. But of course, to basically have no care for these poor people would not be merciful either, and that also wouldn't be consistent with the teaching of Jesus.
So I love your perspective. If you could take a look at the Trump administration, who really shut everything down, he made everyone who wanted to come in, they had to stay on the Mexican side of the border. Then you've got the Biden administration, where the second he won the election, even before the inauguration, caravans are making their way here, and now we're seeing, as I was talking about, this catch and release. Were both administrations lacking in mercy with their approach? And they seem like they're handling this in two diametrically opposed or radically different ways. I'm curious, is there a middle ground? How do you view both administrations' policies? And if you could make the policy, how would you do that?
Well, I think the problem with the Trump administration's policy is there were never enough resources to, in a timely fashion, adjudicate people's claims for asylum.
Right.
So people were ending up waiting at the border since it was basically we're going to adjudicate your asylum claim while you're on the other side of the border. That was never going to happen because the backlog would have been years and years, many years. So people couldn't be from El Salvador living in the northern border of Mexico for 10 years or 8 years or 3 years even waiting for a claim to be adjudicated. That's not something that Mexico could deal with, nothing we could deal with. So in order to have the policy work the way he was saying it, which is to say we will adjudicate these claims in an orderly fashion, you needed to have enough resources to have a prompt, reasonably prompt adjudication of those claims. The Biden administration, while it hasn't on paper changed anything, the message from the Biden administration is y'all come and it'll be fine once you get here. And so that's creating chaos at the border and in the country, and it's leaving these people extraordinarily vulnerable now, especially children. Mm-hmm. So neither one, I think, hit the mark on how to handle these things.
Yeah. My guest today is Father Tom Betts. If you want to join us, I only have him for a few minutes today. I will open the phones. 888-914-9149. You can call now and get in if you'd like to. 888-914-9149. Before I go to the phones, and I'm grateful for everyone's patience, let me indulge myself in one more question. I want your perspective on this. And this has bothered me, to be honest with you. The Biden administration has shut down press access to these sites. What do you make of that? What purpose does that serve?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think it's appalling that they've done that. I could tell you the reason. They're obviously saying, you know, we don't want COVID. COVID becomes the excuse for everything you don't want to do. And so you say, well, you know, if you got in, they'd give you COVID or you'd spread COVID. The other reason they might say is, well, these are children. You can't, you know, see and photograph children. I think that's just all dodges.
Right.
I think what the Biden administration knows is these children are being kept in appalling conditions right now. They're not being cared for properly. And they don't want the world to see that Biden would like to present himself as compassionate, but they're not compassionate in the way they're treating these children and these folks. And I think it's because they don't have the resources there in place either.
Right.
You know, so the other problem was the resources weren't in place to bring them in orderly. Now the resources aren't in place to manage them after they've gotten in. So I think he knows that he's presiding over a humanitarian mess. I mean, they criticized the Trump administration for how they handled these folks here, but the Biden administration is doing no better, or maybe even worse.
Yeah, with a media blackout, so the nation can't really see what's truly happening.
If we saw the photographs, there would be people saying, you know, treat them better. You can't have, whether they should be here or shouldn't be here, they're human beings. We don't let a human being starve, or we don't let a human being live in an inhumane way just because they're here illegally or illegally. We shouldn't do that to a person in prison. Yeah. A person on death row has a right to a dignified life. You know, nobody should be treated. If we believe we're for human life, then we have to treat humans as humans.
So many children down there, too. It raises a question for me. I wonder, not that this is going to be a permanent thing, but should the borders be closed by the Biden administration until they get a grip on this influx of migrants that we have? I mean, should there be a temporary pause, month, couple weeks, longer? I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know what the implications of that would be. I know with the NAFTA treaty, there are people who live in Mexico but work across the border, come back and forth every day. I don't know how. I mean, there's so much economy that goes back and forth across the border that's to the benefit of both nations.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure. I mean, in a way, you can't let this go on the way it's going on. It's not good. But I don't know. I don't know that that's an answer or not. I just don't know.
All right, let's grab a few phone calls. I know we have a couple of minutes left. Bill has got a point for you, Father. Bill's listening in New Jersey. Hi, Bill. You're on the air with Father Betts.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. Just really a comment, and I'm going to tell you exactly what I think is going on here. They're letting these immigrants are being exploited to get to buy votes for 2022 and 2024. You can tell by the way they're acting. They're not. They didn't prepare for this. They told everyone to come over. They're giving them stimulus checks. $1.9 million of that COVID, that $1.9 trillion stimulus package, 9%, as we all know, went to COVID. 9% of it. A lot of it is going to big cities.
Bill, I hate to cut you off, but your signal's really hard to hear. I apologize for that, but I think I made out what you said. And a couple things Bill pointed out, Father. I hope you heard him as well as I did. He says
very hard to hear, but I heard him.
For those who didn't hear, I mean, his point was he thinks that Democrats are letting the migrants in order to get votes, and we know what they're doing with stimulus or tapping into that as well. But go ahead. I'll let you reiterate if I missed anything there, Father.
Yeah, I think that's what you're saying. I'm not sure I can even react to that. Of course, these folks who are here illegally shouldn't be able to vote in 2 years or 4 years, because even if they were on a track for citizenship, it wouldn't be that fast. So I don't know that I do think that immigration is a political issue.
Yeah.
So the way you deal with immigration would win you votes on either side. People who have one view of immigration would be likely to vote for you because you closed the border, and people who want an open border might vote for you. So yes, everybody's making a political calculation about how their immigration policy will affect the next election. That's definitely true.
All right, let me go back to the phones just a couple minutes here. Again, 888-914-9149. I want to go to Glenn in Maryland. A great point here, I think, he's bringing up. Hi.
Any kind of, I don't know, passive view about when there are people emigrating because they're seeking asylum, why isn't there anyone reaching out to the countries that they're fleeing from, you know, and saying, hey, you guys got to do something about the conditions that these people are fleeing from? I never hear anything from that perspective. It's always United States fix the problem. rather than reaching out to these countries and saying, hey, you know, you got to do something over there and make a, you know, make some changes or help these people that are trying to leave your country.
That's such a great point, Glenn. And again, I apologize to anyone who's listening. I don't know whether I'm having phone issues here today or not, but I know some of the calls are difficult to hear. Father, I'm assuming you made that out as well.
I did, and I think, do you give stars for good calls or not?
He gets 5 stars today. Good job, Glenn.
You should give him a star for a good call. Because what he's really saying is the source of the problem is in Central America. And that doesn't mean we have nothing to do with it. That doesn't mean we can turn our backs on that problem. I mean, when you're the neighbor of a country that's in disarray, that country's problems are coming to you. I looked up some statistics today. There's 6 million residents of Lebanon, and there are 1.7 million refugees in Lebanon, 1.5 million from Syria. So this country of 6 million has 1.5 million refugees there. It's a disaster because Syria is a disaster. Now, of course, Lebanon has no power at all to fix the problems in Syria. None. Zero power to do that. But they have the brunt. I mean, that's an incredible burden on Lebanon, a terrible burden on Lebanon because of this, especially Lebanon's all of its problems. So here in the United States, we have some neighbors who have all kind of problems. We can't fix their problems. So in one sense, he's right. The focus should be make those countries places where people could live in, with dignity. And we should be trying that very hard. And actually, the Biden administration has said some things about trying to do that. And I think that is an accurate accurate need.
Yep.
But he's right. If we feel as Christians and as decent human beings that we have a responsibility to try to help the people who are our neighbors who are in suffering, we should be trying to find strategies to help those countries not to be so terrible. That's hard to fix another country, but you know, we should try to do what we can.
Father, it's always great talking with you. I mean, you're always so clear and balanced, and you know, this is an issue that crosses both sides of the aisle. You know, and as Catholics, I mean, we need to make sure we look at it through that particular lens. Thank you for being here. Always good to have you.
My pleasure, Drew. Anytime I'm free, I'm happy to be with you.
You got it. And check out his paper. If you want to learn more, you will see the Catholic perspective on this, go to my Twitter page. I put up Catholic social teaching on immigrants and the movement of peoples.
Do you like to hear bells at Mass? Hi, this is Father Rocky with our 29th lesson on the Mass. I love bells, don't you? Bells are permitted at Mass, but they're not mandatory. Still, I think they add something beautiful to the experience. When I was chaplain at Northridge Prep School for Boys, the 6th and 7th graders always wanted to serve and always wanted something active to do, like ringing the bells. If it were up to them, they'd ring the bells all Mass long. But no, only 3 times. Once at the epiclesis, when the priest puts his hands over the gifts and invokes the blessing of the Holy Spirit. Again, for the 2nd time, when the priest elevates and shows the host to the people. And 3rd time is when the priest elevates the chalice and shows the blood of Christ to the people. The bells at Mass tell us that a miracle has just happened, the transubstantiation. You've been joining me for Lenten Lessons on the Mass. Now I'd like to invite you to join me for Mass itself at noon Central.
And join us for Class After Mass. It's the Faith Explained on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
15 states and the District of Columbia seeing cases on the rise, much of the rest of the nation plateauing instead of declining.
When you have that plateauing, that's usually the forerunner of another surge.
From New York to LA, the Drew Mariani Show is on Relevant Radio.
New York to LA to Maui. Around the world. It's good to be here with you today. Thank you for joining me. Always a delight to have you. Before I go any further, I do want to talk about the new CDC guidelines. Have you caught what's happening in terms of distancing, what it means for school? Just give you a quick update on COVID. We're going to talk with Dr. Robert Tabali. He's going to be stopping by in a second. Before I get to that, I just want to give you an update on my book, okay? Next week is Holy Week. Can you believe that already? It's amazing. So I really don't want to be talking much about the book, although it's a really important book to have, especially in preparation for the Great Feast of Mercy, because I talk all about that great feast and what the Lord promised that you can tap into on that day and the simple things you have to do. But I just want to thank you. Last week I had mentioned that the book was available for anybody who wanted it. And the response has just been it's been off the charts. It's been overwhelming. I was like, wow, I knew people loved Mercy, but this is great. Now, here's the deal. I heard one of the ads running on the air, one of the promotions saying, hey, get the book. And they said, you know, quantities are limited. That's true. There are limited quantities. I want you to be one of the few who get it, okay? I want to thank Relevant, too, because they're paying the cost for the duplication, and they're paying the cost for the shipping and handling to you. So we owe Relevant a great debt of gratitude for their desire and their love of spreading the message of divine mercy. And I know this apostle will be blessed. I had told the founder of this network, one of the founders when I first came on, look, if you promote mercy, God will bless this apostolate. And we went through some difficult times. But I really believe divine mercy was really the heart of that blessing, that God honored his promises to St. Faustina, and he has blessed Relevant Radio. We reached 270 million households nationwide. We're heard around the world, and we continue to proclaim God's mercy. I want you to know about this devotion. It has touched my life. It has transformed my spirituality. It has deepened my love for God. It has liberated me from any sort of fear and anxiety. It has empowered my prayer. And I've seen the fruit of it. I've seen the tangible results of my prayer. I've seen miracles, not just in my own life and those who I prayed for. We see it here every day on the air. I talk about all those things in this book. I mean, you're going to learn about the chaplet and the image and the hour of power and the feast of mercy and the afterlife and what the Lord said about the second coming. You're going to learn about Faustina and her spiritual director. You're going to learn some great history, too. What took place when all this unfolded and what looms in the future? This is an excellent 101 book for you. It's a book that you'll be glad you read and something you can share with others. But as I said, don't wait, okay? I'm not going to talk much about it next week, but right now I really want you to take advantage of it. And here's how you do it. It's relevantradio.com, all right? And so it's simple as that. Just go right now. Don't wait. Go to relevantradio.com and just sign up. Maybe have your daughter or your son or your neighbor or your priest or whoever it might be. Make them aware of it and have everybody you know sign up for this book. It will be available, but when the quantities are gone, that's it. So don't wait. Be part of that first group of people who said, yes, I want the book, and it will be shipped right to your door. It'll take about 15, 20 seconds, but I think it'll be a valuable tool for your spiritual library for years to come. When somebody's sick or dying, when you need a miracle, when the Feast of Mercy comes up, you know, when you need to better understand this whole spiritual principle of trust. There's a whole chapter on that and so much more. I mean, I'm really proud of this book. I'm grateful for you for saying yes and picking it up. I'm grateful for Relevant for being willing to get behind this. And if you are new to this message, hearing it for the first time, do not wait. Go now. Do it now. Go to relevantradio.com and make sure you sign up, okay, and get that. All right? You'll be glad you did. I'm telling you, you're going to be blessed. It is it's a must for the spiritual library. Hey, coming up in a minute, Dr. Robert Tobolli is going to be joining me, one of my favorites. You know, we've been following COVID for over a year now. We heard so much about everything from what the disease was, how it was spread, what the origins of it were, whether or not you need a mask, what social distancing was. There's a lot going on. According to a Fox News report, AstraZeneca said in a statement today that the phase 3 trial of their COVID-19 vaccine, it showed a 79% effectiveness in preventing the symptomatic infections and 100% efficacy rate at preventing severe disease and hospitalization. That's amazing. 100%. So if the FDA approves it, it will be the fourth vaccine available to combat this pandemic in our country. And this particular one is easily stored. It's cheap. It's, I think, $4 a dose. Not a whole lot of money, but there was also some controversy with it in Europe, with several countries suspending its distribution. There was talk that it caused blood clots. Europe's equivalent of our FDA here, the Food and Drug Administration, they finally came down on the side of the vaccine, saying that the numbers just didn't add up to say that it was causing clots. So they gave it the green light. So what does the future hold for us? Are we out of the woods with four vaccines? Or are we going to see a surge? I mean, look, there are more variants that are manifesting in this country, right? So should we expect a surge again because of spring break and everybody's saying the weather's nice? I'm out. Check this report out from NBC.
A state of emergency declared in Miami Beach.
Our city right now in this area has become a tinder.
Officials taking drastic measures to clamp down on out-of-control spring breakers. declaring an 8 p.m. curfew, mobilizing police, even shutting down roads into the city for the next 72 hours. While authorities are concerned about overcrowding and violence, the crackdown comes with Florida, now the third state in the U.S. to pass 2 million cases. Americans are itching to travel. The TSA saw a record nearly 1.5 million travelers Friday, more than at any time during the pandemic. In Fort Lauderdale, this brawl broke out after two passengers refused to wear a mask, causing the entire plane to deboard. Overseas, an outburst in Germany as protesters clashed with police, a response to a wave of lockdowns sweeping across Europe as the EU struggles with a devastating third wave. New stay-at-home orders imposed in France, Poland, and Italy as the World Health Organization this week reported more COVID deaths in Europe now than in March of last year. With vaccinations picking up, the world's return to normal may now be within reach, but we're not there yet.
So, you know, over the weekend, there is a little bit of good news. I know there's a lot of concern about what we're going to see, but the CDC, they released a report. They said that physical distancing for kids in school can be reduced from 6 feet down to three, and that's going to allow schools to put more kids back in the classrooms, although we're coming to the end of the year, right? They're still going to have to wear masks. They're still going to follow the protocols that are meant to reduce the spread. But they will at least be able to have more of their class, you know, time, more classmates back in school with them. I think that's good. Socialization is really important. So this change has caused at least one high-profile physician to question whether the whole social distancing thing was even valid. And that's Dr. Scott Gottlieb. He's a former head of the Food and Drug Administration. He was on CNBC, and he told them that this whole six-foot distancing idea, he says it wasn't based on really any clear science. I always thought it was. Oh, 6 feet, you know, it's 2 meters in Europe. He says the six-foot distancing requirement probably had been the single costliest mitigation tactic that we've employed in response to COVID-19, and it really wasn't based on clear science. He says we should have re-educated, he says, this much earlier, end of quote. So there you have it. Hey, I'm joined by somebody who can clear this up and give us some perspective. We'll take your calls, too, if you want to join us. Dr. Tabali's here with us. He's an infectious disease doc, also a clinical assistant professor of medicine at the University of Illinois, and it's always good to talk with him. Dr. Tabali, thanks for your patience. Good afternoon.
Great to be with you, Drew.
Always good. So CDC changing distancing requirements. I mean, that's good for restaurants. It's good for schools. It's good for a lot of people. What do you make of that? And what do you make of Dr. Gottlieb's comments that, you know, it perhaps really wasn't based on science? I'd love your perspective.
Well, the science wasn't good. The science was quite old, but it kind of was based on science because, I mean, that's the understood distance that droplets can spread from someone who's coughing and or talking. And we do know that many infections are spread by droplets, such as influenza. But this infection seems to have more impact, more ability to go farther and evade you know, protections like masks and things than does influenza. And so we'll know in greater detail in the future, looking back on what we should have done. But in real time, you know, the 6 feet was as good a recommendation as anything.
Yeah, it made sense to me, to be honest with you.
We can see how effective the masking is and all the other precautions, the 6 feet precautions and the, you know, what, sanitizing your hands regularly. We can see the impact it's had on influenza because, I mean, it's completely taken influenza out of consideration this year. I haven't seen an influenza case, period. And that's really due to all these precautions. Now, it shows you how much more infectious the coronavirus is. And I believe when we look back, we'll see it's going to be an aerosol. That's not accepted at this time. But I think, you know, much like measles, it can linger in the air. And people could walk by half an hour or an hour later and breathe it in after someone has been
right.
In an area. So I think we're going to see that it's an aerosol, not a droplet.
Right, right. So what about kids in school? 3 feet sufficient, doctor, in your opinion? Is that fine? Do you think we should stay at 6? What are your thoughts on the social distancing change?
Well, you know, little children don't have the same lung volume that adult-sized children do. And so they can't actually, they're unable to actually expel the particulate matter like an adult-sized child would. And so I think 3 feet is perfectly fine for them.
Okay.
But just as soon as they reach a normal adult size, then
right.
I don't think that 3 feet is adequate. And
gotcha.
6 feet more is a better distance.
So yeah, overall, big picture, you and I have been talking about this forever. You know, we've rode the wave when it began, and you know, we saw the spread, we saw the shutdowns. You know, we talked about masks, we talked about vaccines. Where are we now? We've got 4 vaccines coming on the market. There'll be more coming. Is the pandemic slowing down? I saw a local news report where I live, and they were going through the counties in the state I live and how many people have already received their vaccinations. And the numbers climb every day. One, you know, a year ago, they were looking at death tolls climbing. Now I'm looking at vaccination rates climbing. Where are we? Is the pandemic over? Now, I know there's some new variants. The Brazilian variant is in our country, and we've talked about other ones as well. What do you see for the not-too-distant future, or even for the long view? I mean, where are we going to be come June, come the summer?
Well, the way to break the back of this pandemic is to vaccinate as many people as fast as possible. You reduce the reservoir of infection, the reservoir of the virus out there that's mutating and creating new variants, and you're going to decrease the risk to people to get infected. And so this is going to become an influenza-like annual vaccination. And we won't just be vaccinated against one strain of the coronavirus.
Right.
We'll be vaccinated against multiple variants. So there might be 4 or 5
yeah.
Different, if I can call them, strains in the vaccine.
Yeah.
But that's coming. That's not now. You can still get infected after you get vaccinated. But as you talked about with the AstraZeneca vaccine, the real efficacy of the vaccination is preventing serious and life-threatening illness. It's not preventing illness, you know, perfectly. But all these vaccines will be very helpful. You know, in countries around the world, they don't have access, as much as we don't have access to the vaccines right now, we have really pretty good access. Like, say, in Japan, they haven't even started vaccinating their healthcare workers yet.
Wow.
And here in the United States, about 13% of the adult population has been fully vaccinated. That's huge.
Wow.
And over 110 million people have received at least one dose of the vaccination, like a third of the country. That's amazing. You know, once we get fully vaccinated here or reasonably fully vaccinated,
yeah.
The incidence of the virus is going to drop in the community. There's a lot of people who survived the virus with natural infection.
Yeah.
They've got a degree of immunity, and we'll be in good shape. I think things are going to look good for us during the summer. We'll have these variants pop up, and hopefully we won't see a variant that has attributes of higher infectivity, higher morbidity and mortality, and a lack of protection from other similar infections. Hopefully we won't see that.
Right.
I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
Yeah, I'm with you. My guest today, Dr. Robert Dabbali. Doctor, stay with me. I think it's just a short pause here. When we come back, it is the final segment of the broadcast. If you've got a question and you want it answered, I'll go to the phones when I return. The number here, 888-914-9149. And Doctor, I'm going to ask you a question now. You can think about it for when I come back. Of all the vaccines that are out there, is there one that's any more effective at these variants and all these different strains that are out there, one that you might possibly recommend? I don't know if that's a fair question. Think about it. We'll give you the answer. We'll talk more when I return. Stay with me.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans,
Visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
The Drew Mariani Show is here for you. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, it's good to be here with you. If you missed any of the conversations today, great, great show. We had some wonderful conversations and some fun. You can check it out at the archives. Jake, when we sign off here, he'll get the show online for you. Give him probably 60 minutes or so, and he'll get everything uploaded. And you can go back and visit anything we've had, whether it was a conversation with Dr. Robert Tabali or whether it was on immigration or any of the many things that we talked about today, all right? And to tell others about the show. If you've just found this broadcast, you kind of like what you hear, I'm on every afternoon on the West Coast, 12 to 3, East Coast, 3 to 6, 2 to 5 Central. And, of course, with digital technology, you can actually listen anytime. So it's good to be here with you today. I'm speaking with a very gifted infectious disease doctor, and a lot of vaccines have now hit the road. Looks like vaccination numbers are on the rise, and I just want to put my finger on the pulse of where we're heading, what the future might look like for you and for me. And doctor, there are a lot of vaccines, and I've had discussions about, the ethics of certain ones, et cetera. But I'm curious just about the efficacy of some of these. The AstraZeneca, which I have a problem with because of its origins, shows a very high effective rate. We heard about Pfizer and Moderna's when they came out, 94.5. With the variants and everything going on right now, is there a vaccination that is better than others? I'm not talking about the moral concerns we have with some vaccination. I just want to know, physiologically speaking, is there one that's a little better? And I know you have not been vaccinated yet. You're waiting on one. What can you tell us?
Well, the best vaccines, as far as efficacy across these variants, are the messenger RNA vaccines. That would be the Moderna and Pfizer vaccine. Hmm. There's data coming out regularly now about the ability of these vaccines to create antibodies that will neutralize these variants in a test tube. And so we don't have real-world data with respect to people being exposed to the variants and, how successful they are in avoiding infection. Yeah. But by far, the messenger RNA vaccines are the best ones for the crossover coverage with the variants. Now, the efficacy drops from like 95 to 89% for the British variant to the high 70s for the South African variant. Yesterday my daughter contacted me and said, "Dad, I'm going to get my COVID vaccination tomorrow." She lives in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And my heart was in my throat because I was like, which vaccine is she going to get? So I asked her, "So you're going to get a one dose or two dose?" And she said two doses, which made me very happy because, the ethical compromise with the Johnson & Johnson single dose, the AstraZeneca. I don't believe that there's an ethical compromise or a problem with the messenger RNA vaccines.
Right.
The vaccine that I'm looking forward to being released is a vaccine called Novavax, and that's probably going to go before the FDA in about 4 weeks or so. It's a traditional type of vaccine product, but a very, very high efficacy, and they're able to re-engineer the vaccine to add coverage for the strains, just like what's happening now with Moderna and Pfizer. Right. They're actually engineering new strain protective variant protective vaccines at this time.
Yeah. Well, one final personal question on all this is this going to be one and done, or every year when I get my physical and the doc says, "Hey, do you want a flu shot?" Are they going to say, "Hey, do you want your COVID-19 shot?" I mean, is this something people will get and then it's over, or will they need to get this annually, kind of a booster of some sort?
I'm afraid it's probably going to be a regular vaccination, kind of like influenza. Depending on what happens, it might be able to be blended in with the single shot with an influenza vaccine. But I think we're going to need to revisit this vaccination on a regular basis, probably annually.
Annually. All right. Well, there you go. You heard it here from Dr. Tabali. Let me grab a call or two before we run out of time. Henderson, Nevada is online. Anna wants to join the conversation. Hi, Anna.
Hi, thank you for taking the call. I have a combined question here. Massages, gym, hot tubs and pedicures. Are they safe to get yet?
They might not have been safe ever before the COVID.
I'm sorry, I actually wrote an article on infections.
He says they might never have been safe. I mean, you think about it, he was being facetious. But go ahead, doctor.
Yeah, I actually wrote an article on infections people can get from hot tubs. So, those type of activities we wouldn't really consider to be safe at this time. However, if the person giving the massage or doing the, you know, the nails or doing these services has been vaccinated, and the person who's receiving them has been vaccinated, the risk approaches, you know, it's not zero, but the risk approaches zero. So it'd be very, very low risk.
There you go, Anna. And what was your second part of the question, Anna?
I asked about massages, pedicures, and I forgot, hot tubs.
No, that's fine. So did you hear my, were you able to make out what he said?
It was muffled. I heard part of it.
I'm so sorry. All right. So basically the doctor said he wrote a piece on hot tubs before, and they're really not that, it's really not that safe. But he says you have a very low risk. If a person's been vaccinated that's giving you those services, you should be okay. Okay?
Okay.
Thanks. And, Doc, I hope I recapped what you said clearly. And if I didn't, please correct me.
Yes.
Okay? Before I go back to the phones, long haulers. You and I were talking during the break. I never thought of this. Share with those who are listening right now what you shared with me during the break about long haulers.
Well, there's a recent article that was published from Britain that's showing that up to more than 50% of people who have long haul symptoms from COVID, you know, kind of a chronic fatigue after recovering from COVID, that more than 50% of the people are actually cured of their symptoms by receiving one of the messenger RNA vaccines, so Pfizer or the Moderna. Now, it's not clear whether the same effect would happen with the other vaccines. But this is very encouraging because there's, although the death rate is relatively low across the entire population, there's a lot of people who are suffering significant long-term problems after recovering from COVID, memory loss, excessive fatigue, constant ringing in their ears, loss of taste and smell, inability to do normal average daily living skills, and there's clinics popping up all over the place to take care of these people. But if 50% of those people get cured by getting a vaccination, that's a wonderful thing. So we're really looking forward to repeating that experience here in the United States.
Well, that sounds great. Well, doctor, it is always good to talk with you. I do appreciate it, and I look forward to when our paths can cross and we can spend some more time together. I only have about a minute or two left, so let me sneak one last call in here. Let me see who is on deck. And, you know, Jake's telling me I don't have time. All right, thanks, Jake. All right, doctor, I'm going to leave it at that point then. Thank you for being here and for joining us. We'll catch up again soon, okay? Appreciate it.
Okay, take care.
That's Dr. Bob Tabali. And you can check him out. Say a prayer for him, and especially for his wife, Tamaki. Dr. Tabali, just so you know, is involved with creating a shrine for the unborn. And I'll tell you, this man's been under unbelievable spiritual attack. You know, and I tell him all the time what St. Faustina says, the greater the work, the more beautiful the work, the greater the attack. The evil one does not want that. So if you could just say a prayer for him, I know he would value that a lot. Hey, coming up, Cale Clark will be joining us. I'll be handing off the baton to him. And he's going to talk about why enter a monastery during a pandemic. Yeah, that's a pretty good question, right? It's a pretty good question. Again, the archive is going to be up in a minute. If you missed any of this and you want to share with your loved one what you heard, feel free to go ahead and do that. You'll find all of our podcasts at relevantradio.com. Just go to my show page and check it out. And then tomorrow, I hope you'll join me again. I'm going to give you 3 hours of a look at life you won't get anywhere else. And there is some really, I think, important things for us to talk about. In fact, I was reading one exorcist. We'll talk about this tomorrow, maybe after the chaplet. He claimed that the pandemic has brought on more calls for exorcism ministry. This comes from the Archdiocese of Indianapolis. I'll tell you why. you might be totally baffled. You might be surprised when you hear why the pandemic has brought on more calls for exorcism. So that's coming up along with a lot of other stuff. Hey, I'm out of time for the day. They said, thank you for letting me be part of your afternoon. I'm praying for you all the time. Please do the same for me. I could use your prayers. I really could. Don't forget my book. It's not too late to get it. There will be a cutoff, and there are limited quantities. It's called Divine Mercy, and it will bless you this Lent. It'll bless you for years to come. It's free. No shipping, no handling, no strings. Just go to relevantradio.com. Until tomorrow.